Good evening. And today I'm going to talk about the second to last parami, or perfection. I realize some of you might be here for the first time. And since last October, once a month approximately, I've been giving a talk on what in Buddhism is called the perfections. And in one list, there's 10. And in Sanskrit, they're called the paramitas. And in Pali, they're called the paramis. And we're almost getting to the end. And we're getting to the climax. And the parami, the perfection for today, is that of loving kindness. It's the most common English translation of the word metta, Pali word. And in order to understand the concept of the paramis or perfections, you have to realize that in Buddhist spirituality, it's more important how you are than what you do. It's more important how you are than who you are. How you are in circumstances is very important. And so it's more important to be have a generous heart, generous disposition, generous attitude, than it is particular acts of generosity. Sometimes people can be generous without feeling generous. They're generous, they give, it's not really generous. It's out of their obligation and duty. And how we are is something that can change. The human being is understood in Buddhism to be a process, or many processes that work together. And we're not fixed. Since we're processes, these processes are like ecosystems. They're influenced by all kinds of causes and conditions. And to some degree, we can take responsibility for how we are. And the expectation in Buddhism is we do take some responsibility for how we are. And one way to get there is by taking responsibility for what we do, how we live our life. But more importantly is how we are. And if you can allow me the distinction between personality and character, part of Buddhist practice is the development of character. Cultivation of character. Personality is something which, in this kind of formulation I'm presenting, is kind of what you're born with. Your genes present you a certain personality. I've met many different, quite mature Buddhist practitioners, great teachers, and it's really remarkable how different personalities they have. And in fact, sometimes what added to an understanding is that the more mature a person becomes spiritually, the more idiosyncratic the person becomes. Because there's no inhibitions anymore, there's just the personality being there. And you're not trying to accommodate the social norm so carefully, and not trying to be liked by fitting in or something. You just let kind of your personality be there. And you can see it quite dramatically, for example, in Mahabhua is one of the great, probably the most famous living meditation master in Thailand. A great man, old man. And he was a boxer early in his life. And he still appears kind of gruff. And he's supposed to be as enlightened as they get. And there are other people, other teachers in Thailand, who are just really well known for their kindness. I've met great masters, great teachers, who just seem to be embodiments of kindness, just soft personalities, and personalities seem to be that way. And I've met teachers who seem very kind of stern. And so some of that is personality, just what you're born with, and it's best not to take your personality personal. And just kind of that, there it is. And you got to live with some of what you have. And then by the other hand, there's character. And I don't know if there's a sharp line between personality and character. Probably not. but to kind of maybe it's a useful kind of distinction to make for teaching purposes. And then and then there's character, and character is that part of your who you are, how you present yourself, your disposition, your attitudes, that can be cultivated and developed. And character has sometimes has to do with virtue. You develop character, you develop your sense of virtue. And but not because you have a list of rules you're supposed to follow, but rather it's something that's innate, becomes innate or becomes embedded in who you are, in your heart and your being. And people see you as having as being someone of character, as being someone who's generous or someone who's has a certain way of being. So an important part of Buddhist practice is beginning to shape our character. And there's a very simple principle around this, and that is that whatever you do repeatedly shapes your character. So if you are always shopping, you become more and more, I don't know if everybody, but at least it tends towards more wanting to shop more, to become greedy perhaps. If you spend a lot of time being greedy, pursuing, acting on your greed, it tends to create a character of greed. If you spend a lot of time acting on the tendencies to be generous, repeating that, it tends to shape, to condition a generous disposition. So what we'd ever do repeatedly has an impact on us. And if we don't choose for ourselves what we do, then there are plenty of people in society whose job it is, they're paid a lot of money, to try to get you conditioned in certain ways. And so, so if you spend a lot of time, for example, watching popular media, it shapes the character in some way because of the emotions, the feelings, and messages that come through. I spend time with young children who have watched a lot of popular media, and I spend time with a fair number of kids now who haven't. Parents have kept them away from that. And there's big differences between them. And some of the things that seem to come through popular media don't seem so, the way they shape character, don't seem so exemplary, so useful for people. So, character is important for Buddhism, partly because who we are affects how we can practice. Our character affects our ability to practice to a certain degree. So if you have a lazy character, if you spend a lot of time cultivating your laziness, and people don't realize that they do that, but some people cultivate their laziness, they repeat that over and over again. Then when you sit down to meditate or you want to engage in practice, that laziness is right there. It's, tomorrow. I'll do it tomorrow. Or if you spend a lot of time being anxious and you develop then a habit of anxiety and you sit down to meditate, that habit is going to still be churning away. And it's going to be very hard to let go of it. It's going to interfere. In fact, some habits like anxiety can be self-perpetuating almost. Because you sit down to meditate and you just can't let go of it, anxiety makes you feel bad, so it makes you more anxious. So it goes on and on. Or self-loathing or self-hate or self-deprecation can be the same way, because it feels kind of bad to be this way, it must be proof that it's true, and so then we tell ourselves the same story again. And so if you have these habits of mind, you sit down to meditate, it can be sometimes very hard to break them, and they can be impediment for waking up, for being free. So one of the important reasons to cultivate character in Buddhism is to create the kind of character, create the kind of dispositions, the habits of mind, of heart, that support us, help us to wake up and become free. The interesting thing is that becoming free, waking up, is in and of itself has nothing to do with character. So some people will say, forget about character, just work on waking up, becoming free. Now, if you can do that directly, go for it. But most people, I think, will need to kind of somehow work on their character in order to really be able to go far with the meditation practice of Buddhist spirituality. If you just want a little bit of relaxation, a little bit of calm and stress reduction, you know, you can do that without working on your character, perhaps. But if you really want to take the practice as far as it can take you, what's going to happen is as your mind gets more, as you go deeper and deeper into your psyche, deeper and deeper into your consciousness with meditation or other practices, you begin peeling off the layers of our conditioning. And we see deeper and deeper what has conditioned us. And as we see that, we either recoil or we pull back or we say, forget that, or all kinds of things might happen. But if you, but sooner or later we have to face the deep conditioning. And as we face it, then begin partly setting yourself free from it and seeing it and waking up, but also partly begin reconditioning parts of who we are. So the 10 perfections have to do with 10 qualities of character that can be developed. And some people have some of these things as part of their personality, and that's lucky. Some people don't have them, and it comes with developing, they have to develop them, so it's part of your character. And so, for example, one of the central character traits in Buddhism that you find teachers emphasizing over and over again, especially in Asia, is the importance of developing generosity. And now it could be self-serving, because many of the Asian teachers are dependent on your generosity. Right, even here too, like we're dependent on your generosity, right? So I should talk about generosity all the time, and until you see me driving down with a Rolls Royce, then that is probably enough. But you could wonder, you know, is it self-serving to talk about generosity a lot? However, I think the reason why Buddhism puts a lot of emphasis on generosity is the absence of generosity, the opposite generosity, to be stingy or miserly, to be held in or resistant or tight, it goes against the grain of freedom. And as the movement of generosity is a movement of openness outward, a giving, a freeing. And what's important is not necessarily the acts of generosity, but rather that you start cultivating a heart, a mind, that has the ability to be open and generous and free. So that it's so simple that you're ready to be generous with your smile or with your eyes. You see someone, and it's not your habit to simply turn away first, because, you know, you don't want to really have much to do with people. But rather a generous person would actually say, oh yeah, kind of be there present, offer, to have a generous presence in some way. It can be that simple. So generosity is the first one of these character traits that is emphasized over and over again in Buddhism. Cultivate your generosity, cultivate a generous spirit. The next one is our virtue, our integrity. It's very important to develop integrity. The absence of integrity, lying and stealing and things like that, require the theory behind this. You can test it out. Don't test it out too much, but the theory is that that you can't really transgress against ethical, basically the golden rules of ethics. You know, don't steal, don't lie, don't kill, without somehow harming yourself, without somehow contracting in yourself. And so if you want to start becoming free and open and sensitive, you don't want to do something that closes you down. And being unethical does that. So developing a character that's ethical, developing a character that has the ability to let go, the word is renunciation, to let go. It doesn't mean you have to let go of everything, renounce everything, your wealth and your cars and all that, but it means that you have the ability not to hold, to let go of your holding. We hold on to experiences, we hold on to people, we hold on to so many different things. And to have the ability to let go and not be burdened by the holding. Then there is wisdom or discernment, the capacity to be discerning, the capacity to engage in life with a kind of willing to inquire, to ask, what is this? To look more carefully and be discerning. That's a quality that can be developed and cultivated. Some people I've seen come to Buddhism and want to take the lazy person's approach to Buddhist practice. It's all about just letting go and sitting quietly and being still, and everything will just unfold the way it's supposed to unfold. Classically, the way Buddhist practice is taught is it's very important to use your intelligence and use it, that you make a habit of using it so that it's available to you, so you become a more discerning person. Then you need a the other character trait is what comes after wisdom is what?
Energy.
So energy or effort or engagement to apply yourself, not to be lazy. After that comes patience, because anybody who applies himself and engages better learn patience very quickly. So it's cultivate the capacity to be patient in all kinds of situations. And I think I've become a much, much more patient person because I have kids. And that's a quality painfully acquired. And then, so patience, and then comes truthfulness. To the capacity to be someone who's true to their word, is true, speaks truly. And then comes the character quality of resolve or determination. To be resolved, to have the ability to be resolved and determined. You meet people sometimes, they seem to have ability. If they resolve something, they do it. You know, get out of their way. They're just kind of, they're doing it. They're engaged to do it. Sometimes it can be flip over and become obsessive. But to be resolved is a very good character trait if you want to get something done. And get something done is what Buddhist practitioners want to do. They want to practice. They want to engage in practice. Practice, a spiritual practice, can become for some people one of the most important things they want to do in their lives. And it's a world of difference between being what's called a nightstand Buddhist and someone who is really determined and they're going to follow through on an engagement and doing it. Nightstand Buddhist, someone who just reads a lot of books about Buddhism. Sounds good, it's a good idea, it's great, I'm inspired, great. Let me go to the bookstore, I finish that book. And I remember there was a time in my practice where I couldn't read a Buddhist book more than about, certainly not more than a page a day. Because one page just blew me away. And I just like, wow, well, I have enough to do now for a while. And I would read a page or a paragraph, and then I would just kind of, live without for the day. So then we come to loving kindness. And loving kindness is said to perfect resolve or determination. That's an interesting idea. And one of the reasons why it is another interesting idea behind these perfections is that the perfections are not simply character traits. That in order for a character trait to be a perfection or a parami, it needs to be connected to compassion, our compassionate concern for others, our compassionate connection to other people. And that's also kind of a character trait. You can cultivate and develop your compassion. And it needs to be connected to the movement or the interest, the inclination, the understanding of how to get liberated yourself. And those two wonderful qualities, compassion for others and a certain kind of compassion for yourself, which is moving you to becoming liberated. They need to be together. They need to be very, very important to balance those two forces. Some Buddhists are only about compassion for others, and they lose themselves in the process. Some Buddhists are all about themselves, and it's kind of narcissistic, and they lose some other quality that's really, really important. It's the balance here in the paramis that's considered very important. So the loving kindness as a perfection of resolve, one of the resolves is resolve to be of service to others, to express our compassion for others. And to perfect that compassionate concern, there needs to be loving kindness, a kindness for others. So today the topic is loving kindness. And I found, for me, I think of loving kindness as being one of the secret jewels of Buddhism. And it's secret for two reasons, in my mind. One reason is that when I was introduced to Buddhism and Buddhist practice through Zen for many years, no one ever talked about loving kindness as a practice or as anything. And I didn't have a clue that it even existed. And then I came across the tradition that we're teaching in here, the Theravada tradition. And I heard teachers talking about it, and my first reaction was, that's sentimental, and it's artificial. I'm a Zen student. We just get right to the point. And none of this kind of wishy-washy kind of sentimental stuff, you know, that's kind of artificial. We just kind of like, here, we'll wake up, we're present, enough. And so I just kind of tune the teachers out. And then one of the qualities of waking up, being present, of being mindful, is it begins to dissolve the crusts in the heart, the obstacles in the heart, through the heart being sensitive, the heart being loving. And so I found that as I was doing practice, I became more and more loving, more open, more generous, more kind of this feeling of kindness, of certain kind of joy and gratitude, appreciation, all kind of connected to this feeling of love, loving kindness. And I was blown away by the capacity for the heart to feel love, to feel this tremendous sense of well-being that feels like it's radiating out and kind of loving everything. Loving a leaf, loving a person, loving anything. And you know, one of the surprises of it was that it didn't require anything in return. It didn't require the other person to love me or like me. And when I first encountered this, I kind of thought of it as, I didn't really know much about it, but what was going on, but I associated it with kind of a paternal care, parental care. Kind of parental care of just kind of being, just lovingly caring for what's there without concern about what you get back in return. Just, you know, tend it, nourish what's there, care about it in some way. So that's one reason the secret was that, you know, it was a long time for me to discover it. Once I discovered it, then when the teachers talked about it, then or when I was introduced to the practice, then I had a reference point. And then the practice of loving kindness, the cultivation of it, made a lot of sense to me. It wasn't sentimental, it wasn't artificial, it just became alive, something very deep and important. The other way I think of it as a secret is that it's one of these things called an open secret. You know, it's not really a secret. You can read a lot of books about it, but to, you know, it's one thing to have the concept of it. It's another thing to have this awaken inside of you, this little kind of generator inside that opens up and starts, you know, radiating, a little furnace. I don't know if that's a good metaphor for the hot days, but it's an open secret. So loving kindness, the word is metta, and it's translated into English many different ways. Loving kindness is the most common one, but it's also translated as goodwill, as benevolence, as amity, because the word is connected to friendliness or friendship, friend. So amity, and some people translate it as a gentle friendliness. The problem with the word loving kindness is that it has the word love in it. And love, in English, is a complicated, multifaceted word. It has so many different meanings. But probably more important is the word love, for many people, can have a lot of different associations which maybe are not so helpful in the context of developing metta. If we watch a lot of movies or read a lot of books, and sometimes love is supposed to be, you know, a certain way. It's supposed to be glorious and passionate and fantastic, and it's supposed to have all these kind of whistles with it maybe sometimes. And so you're told, oh, you're supposed to develop loving kindness, and then you look for the whistles and the strength and the power. And Gill talks about it being a furnace, and you know, where, you know, it's like, where is it? Some people connect better to the word, the kindness part of loving kindness. I like the word kindness a lot. So that metta is a form of kindness, friendly kindness, kind regard. And kindness doesn't have to be so big as love. It can be simple. As one teacher says, the word kindness is more humble than love. And it's kind of just a humble thing. It doesn't have to be dramatic and big and or anything. I remember once, many years ago, I was hiking with day hike with a group of people over kind of very difficult terrain that required climbing over big boulders and little cliffs and stuff. And there was a woman along who had trouble around this So I stayed behind and was right there next to her, ready to help her with a hand or help her up and everything. And it just felt like the right thing to do. It felt just nice to do, not the right thing to do. But what surprised me of doing it was how good I felt doing it. And it wasn't good like I felt proud of myself. It wasn't egotistical. There was kind of a very soft, gentle kind of feeling of very soft, subtle kind of feeling of kind of gentle feeling. I was being kind. It wasn't anything dramatic. I was just giving my hand. But it has nice feeling inside. So kindness, to cultivate kindness, as I think most of you know, the Dalai Lama has defined his religion as being kindness, as opposed to being Buddhism. Isn't that nice? My religion is kindness. I mean, if everybody's religion was kindness, then we wouldn't need religions. So it's often taken as the attitude, metta is the attitude we have to a beloved friend. Sometimes it's taken to be the attitude of a parent to a child in the best moments, kind of kind, love, care, parental feelings. And what's interesting about this is that you're encouraged to take the relationship where you feel kindness or loving kindness or friendliness or care, benevolence, goodwill, take that as a reference point. So take the place where you feel it the most. Maybe to yourself, some people feel. Sometimes, maybe it's a family member, an old grandmother you had or someone, or, someone, a child or nephew or niece, or I don't know, someone, where that feeling of benevolence, of goodwill, really, where you want the best in them, you want them well, is strongest. And then use that as a reference point for how it's possible to have the heart radiating or flowing or caring. And then see if you can expand that, stretch that, develop it, so you have the same attitude towards others. And eventually, to everyone. So that your feeling of kindness, of goodwill, your well-wishing, is as powerful to everyone in the world as it is to someone you care for. So rather than doing away with your care for others, saying you shouldn't care for people in this kind of way, what Buddhism says is, good, you have it. Now universalize it. Take it beyond the usual boundaries of where you limit yourself in how you care for people. Some people only care for their families. People only care for their neighbor or the ethnic group or their nationality group. And they have the limits to how far they're willing to kind of extend their loving kindness or their friendliness. And the encouragement in Buddhism is don't have any limits to it. Develop it. Try to see if you can push the limits, expand the limits, until eventually can you make it limitless without any limit. Now, the word, there's a very interesting idea in Indian Buddhism. Let me say it simply. A word which is considered to be a synonym of loving kindness, or almost a synonym, is non-hate. And in Indian Buddhism, the absence of something often implies the presence of the positive quality. So non-hate is a synonym to loving kindness. And that was a very important key for me to understand the nature of loving kindness and why it's so important. And that is that when I'm cultivating loving kindness, when it goes really well, one of the things it's doing is it's opening up or releasing the places where there's ill will, the places where there is holding, the places where the heart is contracted. So there's kind of it's not just simply about some need to be loving for them, it's also a releasing of where we're holding here. And in fact, if we release the holding in here, what you probably find is the tendency to be kind is very close at hand. So there's this kind of wonderful mutual relationship between cultivating loving kindness and releasing something inside of us. And that's one of the things that makes me feel quite wonderful about loving kindness, when I feel that connection to what it does inside, this releasing, this opening. Now that could maybe seem like maybe self-serving. Maybe you and your kind is supposed to be all about other people, not how you are yourself. But a kind of wonderful, the wonderfulness of this is that selfishness, narcissism, is a contraction again. And so if I'm doing my loving kindness for selfish reasons, then I'm actually also, you know, I might release a little bit, but I'm also contracting at the same time. So so that there's kind of a self-purifying movement of this practice of just opening and releasing. And you benefit from it, but those benefits hopefully are not going to trip you up by being selfish about it. Does that make sense? Hopefully it made sense. Now it's said though that there are many benefits from practicing loving kindness, developing a disposition and attitude of kindness, and being able to strengthen it, and not just leave our kindness or love to chance, to appear by accident when causes and conditions happen, but actually cultivate it takes the ability to develop it as something that's close at hand, ready to be used, ready to be opened up, something that's is always there. And there's a list of 11, a very famous list of 11 benefits to you that can come if you cultivate loving kindness a lot. And one is, the first one is, you'll sleep happily. That's good, isn't it? If you haven't been sleeping very happily lately, you might see what you can do about developing your kindness. And one way to develop kindness is to act kindly. The second is you'll wake up happy. If you've been waking up groggy a lot, it might just be you're sleep deprived, but one has no bad dreams. One is loved by others. One is loved by non-humans, animals and such. One is protected by devas. And it's an interesting one, protected by devas. Some of us don't believe in the same cosmology of gods as the ancient Indians did. So what does that mean, protected by devas? I like to think of it being we're protected by unconscious forces, unseen forces. Unconscious, we've got unconscious forces in ourselves. And then it has something that says fire, poison, or sword won't touch one. So that's nice. One's mind becomes concentrated quickly. And that's one of the reasons why some people develop loving kindness meditation, is so that it supports their other meditation by developing their capacity to get concentrated. And there are a lot of people I know who will spend 10 minutes doing loving kindness meditation first before they do mindfulness meditation, because loving kindness meditation develops concentration, and maybe more important, it develops a friendly kind of generous attitude to the present moment, what's happening to ourselves, rather than whatever else is going on, if we're kind of anxious or angry or whatever. And then this is a good one, next one. It's a lot cheaper than some of the ways people do this in our society. Loving kindness is really cheap. Just all you need is time. You develop your, give your time to doing it enough, and it's going to be a lot cheaper than. And that is, one's complexion becomes clear. One dies with a mind free from confusion. And if no higher attainment is reached, one is reborn in the Brahma realms. One is reborn in a very, very nice heavenly realm. There's one little story from the time of the Buddha where this man comes up to the Buddha and says, I'd heard before I met you that you radiated loving kindness. And now that I've seen you, now that I've met you, I see that it's true. So it's just kind of a first-hand account, supposed to be a first-hand account of someone seeing the Buddha and recognizing here's a person emanating kindness. What's interesting is the Buddha said in response. He said, basically, I don't have exactly right, but he said, Maybe the guy said, and it's just, you know, anyway, so the Buddha said, it would be accurate if what you said was that I have no hate, no anger, and no animosity. Anger, ill will, animosity has been cut at the root, has been pulled out, and it simply doesn't exist in my heart anymore. The causes and roots, the causes and conditions for it to arise is gone for me. And that's a very interesting that the Buddha said that. It's almost like he's agreeing with the guy, saying, yes, I have also loving kindness, but he's saying something different. And part of the reason for that is that the Buddha is saying, I've gone further than simply developing loving kindness. I've done the liberating work of getting down to the root of clinging, the root of hatred, and I've actually plucked it out of my heart. And then it's that plucking it out that then leaves in the heart sensitivity to the world around it, that sensitivity that could be expressed as love or kindness, caring. So it's very important not to take loving kindness. So I think this is what Buddha was doing in this little conversation. Very important not to take loving kindness as being the goal, as being the ultimate purpose of Buddhism. The ultimate purpose of Buddhism is to liberate, to become free. And so loving kindness serves in that direction, and it serves for creating a wonderful society and responding compassionately to the places of need. But don't get caught by the loving kindness either. I think this is the whole point. But rather use loving kindness and use the openness, the freedom that can come when we let go of the barriers to loving kindness as providing momentum to become freer and freer until you can pluck out the deepest clingings that you might have in your psyche. So some people don't like the word love. As loving, some people don't like the word kindness because kindness maybe is too wimpy or kind of soft or kind of some people, you know, and some people prefer the word goodwill. That loving kindness, metta, is simply an attitude of goodwill, that you have goodwill to the people around you, goodwill to yourself. So I don't know what it is for you, which word you guys, any of you prefer, but you might play with different words if the word loving kindness doesn't quite work for you. It's not meant to be sentimental. It doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be sweet. Goodwill doesn't have to be sweet. For those of you who are new to this idea of loving kindness, I would like to just mention then that there's a meditation practice on loving kindness. So one of the ways to cultivate and develop this kindness or this openness of the heart, this generosity of spirit, is a meditation practice where that's the focus of the meditation practice, is to evoke, give expression to our goodwill, our intentions to wish well for others, our well-wishing. And it's a beautiful practice for the people who are ready for it. And I wasn't ready for many years. So there's no need to be in a hurry to be ready. But you should know that there's a secret. The Buddhism has a secret. And sooner or later, that secret will become your own, when you begin discovering this wonderful capacity of the heart. So I don't know what you think of this talk, or this or at least the concept of loving kindness, but what I'd like to encourage all of you to do is to look in yourself, in your life, in your situation, and look and try to see if you can find that place where you limit your goodwill. See if you can find a place where there's a limit to your goodwill. Well, you have tremendous goodwill for your family, maybe to your neighbors, to certain people, but notice the place where there seems to be a limit to your goodwill. No, I'm not going to do it there, thank you. You know, the person who works to the left of me, you know, I'll bring him flowers, I'll, you know, make him lunch, I'll take him out, you know, for lunch someday, I'll wish him well, ask about her kids or whatever. But the person who works on my right, you know, You know, and that's an example. Goodwill goes in one direction, not the other direction. Look and see where in your life goodwill is limited, where you limit your goodwill. And then start investigating that phenomena. Look at it. What's happening there when you're limiting it? What's happening to you? What's the cost in you to limit your goodwill? So regardless of whether the person deserves your goodwill or not, look at the cost in you. What's happening inside of you when you're limiting your goodwill? Take a good look at your muscles, at your mind, at your thoughts, at your heart, your emotional feeling tone, your breath. Look at yourself. What happens when you limit? And then, maybe in the privacy of your own heart, so that person who doesn't deserve it will never know, experiment. Stretch that heart of yours a little bit and see if you what it takes to have some goodwill, some kind regard, some generosity of spirit to that person. See, you can experiment, kind of push that limit, that edge. And one of the ways of pushing that edge is to try to discern, try to see that which is lovely or beautiful in the other person. To look at their beautiful qualities. If you have a habit of looking at people's bad qualities, that will condition a certain kind of attitude towards other people. If you have a habit of looking for their good qualities, that'll cultivate a different one. Hopefully we're realistic and we see both. And some people will say that loving kindness is always realistic because loving kindness involves a releasing of barriers, releasing of filters, not putting a sweet filter over what the situation is. So when there's this loving kindness, you actually see the person more realistically, warts and all. But to be sensitive, to be able to see the good qualities in someone, is one of the things that helps develop and cultivate our willingness to open the heart to them, develop goodwill. So what does it take? You just look at that person on the right and say, you know, can I see something in some redeeming feature, some good? And hopefully, eventually, as we stretch ourselves this way, we begin seeing that everyone, just the fact that they're a human being, all human beings, can be the recipient of our goodwill. Just the fact that, you know, the basic dignity of being a human being, basic generosity, our generosity towards everyone. And it feels so good to do that because the opposite feels so bad. So my hope is that all of you will just really appreciate the liberation, the freedom, the release that can come inside of you as you begin appreciating, as you begin opening to your innate goodwill. So thank you. And for those of you who are new and don't know the full list, we've done 9 perfections now. Loving kindness was the 9th. And then next month sometime, we'll do the last one. And the last one is equanimity. And so the equanimity perfects loving kindness. So thank you.